Before we dive into my sermon tonight, I'd like to take a moment to reflect on a little bit on this morning's sermon. And this idea that all that matters is love, and that a lot of people around the world seem to take that to heart and think that that's truth. When Josh spoke about that this morning, this line from a movie kept going back and forth in my head, and it's mostly the wording that gets in your head a little bit, but the movie Hail Caesar from a couple years ago, and I honestly don't remember much about that movie except for this line. The line was, "Would that it were so simple." I find a lot of times today we see a lot of people think that simplified salvation is the way to go. And I thought Josh did a great job of breaking down the different kinds of love, both in the Bible and not, and the different things you also need beyond just love to find salvation and be with God. So I thought you did a great job this morning with that, Josh. Let's go ahead and get started and turn your Bibles to Romans 4, verse 15. And this is kind of what I want to base everything on this evening. And I put this in here because, you know, you think of me saying don't be so quick to judge. There's, I think, immediately some things we think about when we think about judging each other. But I threw this in here to kind of help guide us toward exactly what I'm talking about. Romans 4, verse 15. "For whatever things were written before were written for our learning, that we, through the patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope." The sermon topic tonight comes from an idea that we can read Scripture, and we can see that people in the Bible made bad choices. We see that all the time. But the question I have is, what's our reaction? I want us to look at these Bible examples and go beyond maybe initial reaction of, what were they thinking? And see that there might be a little more to learn from it. I ask you if you've heard some of these terms that came to my mind. The Monday morning quarterback. Someone who, you know, when we're talking about football, watches the game and then comes to work on Monday and just has all the answers. He knows exactly what should have been done, what plays should have been called, what the coach should have done. Same with the armchair quarterback. Very similar, except for it's more right there in your home and when you're sitting in your chair watching a game. And then a backseat driver. You're not in control of that car, but you sure have an opinion, right? So how easy is it to be those things? They're types of people who know, they think they know better than the actual driver or the coach calling plays or the quarterback or other players on the field. But it's usually with the benefit of having see the play develop or see whatever happened in the car develop. They can look back on it and see it. And I'd say, especially when we read the Bible, second guessing is pretty easy from the outside looking in, especially after we've seen the whole picture develop. And I had this all planned out and everything, and then I saw something yesterday that fits my description of the armchair quarterback. The Alabama's quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, there'll be a test on how to pronounce that later. He gets hurt in a 35-7 game. He has a dislocated hip. And some of us old enough to remember Bo Jackson, very similar type of injury. He gets a dislocated hip in the second quarter, up 35-7, and immediately people say, oh, they should have never had him in there that long. He shouldn't have been in the game. He should have already been out. It's a second quarter. Now, Ohio State had the same score. Justin Fields played the first series of the third quarter. And if he got hurt, I guarantee you a lot of people here in between services, we would have been talking about why did Ryan Day put him out there in the second half. So it's this idea that we can second guess decisions that end up having results. But how many times have we read in our Bibles or studied the Bible together and had this type of armchair quarterback reaction? Why did God's people do this? Didn't they know God was there for them? Didn't they listen to God, what God had told them before? We have these examples so that we can learn from them. But we also need to see that these people were human just like we are. And if we aren't careful, we can make the same type of mistakes that they made. So let's take a look at some examples. We've got Numbers 11, verses 4 through 6. Here we find the Israelites complaining about eating manna, which God had provided for them and really had sustained them and was their daily source of food. Go ahead and read there 4 through 6. "Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, 'Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up. There is nothing at all except this manna before our eyes. God had saved these people from Egypt. They delivered them. He had delivered them from the greatest country, nation in the world. He did so by performing miracles, including the parting of the Red Sea, and even the manna itself is a miracle for these people. So why wouldn't they automatically think that this was grace from God and we should accept it happily? And it's important because we've looked through this before, I'm sure. We look at these kind of, these areas and we look through a lens and say, what was wrong with them? They're so ungrateful. But if you take the second to look at it a little more closely, you might see when they complained about the manna they were eating, they had been eating it for a long time. And it's all that they were given to eat. What would you say to that? I mean, I know some people who won't eat leftovers a day or two after the initial meal. And these people were eating it day after day. But we don't want food over and over, do we? So while they should have been grateful to God for taking care of them, can we see how they let their guards down? Can we see how they, being human, might not remember God's grace in that moment? Go ahead and turn to Numbers 20. We'll read 7 through 13. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water for them out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock? Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and the animals drank. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. So we know Moses struck the rock when he was told to speak to it, and he also declared a share in the miracle. And again, we look at that and we say, boy, why would he do that? Well, he should have known better. You know, he spoke to God all the time. He knew to follow God's rules. I think sometimes we make things a little too simple. It's easy to judge Moses for that. We can look at him and wonder why he did what he did. But if you look at it from his point of view, he was exasperated from the actions of the people of Israel and all the things they were doing. He had had enough of their complaining and sinning against God. And it would seem he had a quick lapse in judgment. And now we know he paid dearly for it. So while what he did was most certainly wrong, what I want us to see is if it could happen to a great leader like Moses, a man who spoke with God often, what could happen to us if we have a same lapse in judgment? Or maybe we would be easily disposed to having that lapse of judgment. Turn back to Numbers 13. In that chapter, God has told Moses to send 12 spies into Canaan. And when they came back, the report was supposed to set them up to go ahead and go take Canaan. But it was decidedly negative. Caleb made a plea, of course, to go up and take possession right away because he knew God would be on their side. Unfortunately, though, the vast majority of people didn't believe it. If you look at verses 31 through 33, it says, but the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw giants. It says the descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. You've got giants, walled cities, you're vastly outnumbered. It takes real faith in God or trust in God to go ahead and do what needed to be done. And these people obviously lacked both. But when we read that sometimes, I think we just completely wonder how they could react that way. After all they had been through. And the answer is that they let fear enter their decision making. They were afraid of all those things they saw in the promised land, and they forgot that God would be there for them. We won't take the time to turn to there. On Wednesday nights, Josh had a segment about this. We know David and Samson had their sins of lust, and Josh had about, what, six or eight other people he listed throughout the text that we could point at. We can question how men, especially these ones that God trusted to be leaders of his people, how could these men act this way? But the thing to remember is they were people just like we are. They're not God's equals. They were prone to make mistakes just like us. Now, if we stop there and we think about these Old Testament examples, I'm sure there's many more we could point toward. What do they have in common? And I'd submit that they're human reactions to situations. They're humans or people making decisions without having God in their hearts. We've mentioned the Israelites complaining about being tired of eating the same food all the time. We talked about Moses being exasperated by the Israelites complaining and taking credit for something that he didn't really do. And then David and Samson both had sins of lust, and there's people today that have that impulse and they act on it. We mentioned fear. To us, it can seem crazy that these people didn't trust in God who led them to the doorstep of the promised land, but they saw these armies. They saw these protected cities. They saw being outnumbered, and they saw the giants and the large people, and they were afraid. Without God in our hands, that's just what we are too, in our hearts, I mean. We're just common people who can make mistakes based off of reactions or feelings. But those people forgot about God, and we need to try not to forget about God ourselves. Some of them forgot because they had a moment of fear, or some of them did it often. In the New Testament, we have the example of Jesus when he returned to his hometown, to Nazareth. And now in Luke 4:16, it reminds us that Nazareth is where Jesus was brought up. And not only was this the hometown boy returning, but in verses 14 and 15, it says he had taught in synagogues throughout the area, and have been glorified by all. The people of Nazareth had heard about Jesus' works around these other places. So here he is in his hometown. He reads from Isaiah and he sits down. And as I read it before Jesus reacts, I kind of thought that the people were impressed by him. But they must have wanted more, and he sensed that. Let's go to Luke 4:23-30, where it says, "He said to them, 'You will surely say this proverb to me, Physician, heal yourself. Whatever we have heard done in Capernaum, do also here in your country.' Then he said, 'Assuredly, I say to you, no prophet is accepted in his own country. But I tell you truly, many widows were in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, and there was a great famine throughout all the land. But to none of them was Elijah sent except Zarephath, in the region of Sidon, to a woman who was a widow. And many lepers were in Israel in the time of Elisha the prophet, and none of them was cleansed except Naaman the Syrian.'" My understanding as I read this is he's saying he didn't come to town just to put on a show. He wasn't going to be a three-ring circus just because this is his hometown, and that's what they wanted. And they responded to his words. "So all those in the synagogue, when they heard these things, were filled with wrath, and rose up and thrust him out of the city. And they led him to the brow of the hill on which their city was built, that they might throw him down over the cliff. Then passing through the midst of them, he went his way." My snap judgment is to wonder what is wrong with these people. And I think that's probably a good judgment. They can see the greatness in their midst. They marveled at Jesus' speaking ability when he read to them from Isaiah. But it wasn't enough. And if we look at it from their point of view, if you take out the idea that they should just soak in all Jesus had to give them at the time, I think maybe you could see yourself being a little let down if we were in their shoes. We'd heard all these great things, and now he's coming to here, where he's from. He's certainly going to do the same things here. We might be a little bit let down that he was doing all those miracles and doing all the things in those other cities. And now that he's here where he was raised, he doesn't do anything but read and sit down. Again, it's not justifiable. They were not justified, especially with the anger that they had. But maybe it's a little bit more understanding if we put ourselves in their shoes. Let's look at Peter and the lack of faith he had when he denied knowing Jesus. Now, Peter is about as common a whipping boy as we'll find in the Bible. I think it's really easy to point a finger at Peter because we know about all the things that he has seen. He has seen Jesus do a lot of great things. He's been taught by Jesus personally, and he knows, supposedly, that Jesus means what he says. But let's first look at the time just before Jesus was arrested when he warned Peter that he would deny knowing him. If you turn to chapter 26 of Matthew, we'll read from 31 to 35. Then Jesus said to them, "All of you will be made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written, 'I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered.' But after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee." Peter answered and said to him, "Even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble." Jesus said to him, "Assuredly, I say to you that this night before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." Peter said to him, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." If we stop there, it would seem ridiculous that Peter would ever deny Jesus. Again, he's seen Jesus through all these things. He's been kind of warned leading up to this what's about to happen. And if he says he won't deny Jesus, he won't. But Jesus said it would be so, and so we have to take him at his word. And if you turn down to Matthew 26, 69 through 75, this is after Jesus had been taken and Peter had followed closely behind. What did Peter do? Now Peter sat outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him saying, "You also were with Jesus of Galilee." But he denied it before them all, saying, "I do not know what you are saying." And when he had gone out to the gateway, another girl saw him and said to those who were there, "This fellow also was with Jesus of Nazareth." But again he denied with an oath, I do not know the man." And a little later those who stood by came up and said to Peter, "Surely you also are one of them, for your speech betrays you." Then he began to curse and swear, saying, "I do not know the man." Immediately a rooster crowed, and Peter remembered the word of Jesus who said to him, "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." So he went out and he wept bitterly. Why didn't Peter stand up for Jesus? It's pretty easy to say, well, he should have. He's one of his disciples. And we've probably asked that question hundreds of times, each of us. But we were told by Jesus early in the chapter what happens when the shepherd is struck, the sheep of the flock scatter. And that is what happened. Actually, in that conversation one time, I had somebody say, well, at least Peter was there. Where are the other disciples? We know where Judas was, but where are the others? But more to the point with Peter, if you put yourself in his shoes, this great man, Jesus, has been arrested. It's becoming real. They are going to kill him. And if they're going to kill Jesus, what will they do to you if you're Peter? Peter had proclaimed he would die with Jesus if he must, rather than deny. But I think if we're honest with ourselves, it's a lot easier to say that we will die for something than to actually do it. And it's very easy to point a finger at these people and say they should have trusted in God. But then we have to ask ourselves, do we always trust in God? All the people we've talked about had knowledge that if they trusted in God, he could save them in some way, whether it was giving them food, delivering a land, or even our eternal salvation. So if we know that trusting in God would save them, despite what trials or moments encountered, why didn't they? Because they didn't remember God in those moments. Can we see, though, why some of these choices were made? I think we can. These examples are here for us to learn, as we read at the beginning of the sermon. We are human. We are people just like they were, and we can make these same mistakes if we're not careful. Now, what can we learn from this? Don't be so quick to judge people in the Bible. Hindsight is much easier after we have all the facts. Is it easier for me to read about the manna and just assume that they should have done what was right? I didn't live in that time. I wasn't experiencing what they were experiencing. Number two, we need to learn from past mistakes. We've heard this all through our own history classes in school or even discussions here in church services. History has a way of repeating itself. It does all throughout the Bible, has all throughout even the modern world when it comes to wars and decisions people make or even relationships. It has a way of repeating itself. We need to know that these sins or mistakes have consequences. Despite the fact that Moses' sin may seem fleeting and somewhat quick and small at the time, a one-time mistake and a lifetime of serving God. Think about that. He had served God for this whole lifetime, but he still had to pay for his sin. And last, try to look at these and other examples from different points of view. And maybe we can question decisions made, but also think about why they made them. Sunday mornings, we've been studying Job. And in the context of this sermon, Job offers a great example of what we should do. I've been busy tonight giving you some examples of times when people didn't do what they should do. Job is a great study on how to handle those roadblocks in life, no matter what Satan put in front of him. In those times when things just aren't going so well, we can turn to Job. So we have resources where we can learn from things that are right, and we have resources where we can learn from decisions that are made that are wrong. It's those times when things aren't going so well, or when we are fearful, and that includes being fearful of standing up for God, or even just being worried that we can't accomplish something because we aren't involving Him in our day-to-day decisions. And while it's understandable, when people in this world fall short of recognizing what is right, we can always try to be like Job and try to make the right decision. Remember who God is and what He has done for us, and we will always come out on top. We'll always have the right decision in our hearts. Now, if you find yourself more like Moses in his weakest point, or afraid like those spies in the Promised Land, lustful like David and Samson, or even someone who proclaims allegiance to God but falls short when the going gets tough, we can address those issues either together or you can do it on your own with study. Or maybe you have yet to accept Jesus in your heart as your Savior. And if that's the case, you can come forward as we stand and sing.